This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app and you'll get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus rewards registration required. Points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
The Big Fat Runs Claret and Blue Army podcast is brought to you by
Stop, grab your spoon and listen. It's hunger grabbing your attention. Will the rice taste nice and creamy with fruit that's light and dreamy? Rice, rice, baby. Oh, it's Mulla. Rice, rice, baby. Word to your Mulla. Mmm, tasty.
When it went 2-0 to Sheffield Wednesday, it was looking like game set and match straight away in the first half.
Bit grim, wasn't it?
Villa were never in it. 2-0 down, and it happened so quickly. 36 minutes, it was kind of looking all over. The crowd was singing, Judas, Judas, what's the score? Mm. And the first goal came when, you know, the game had barely started as well. And
the first game of the season, you know, you have these hopes and dreams, don't you? And you go to somewhere like Hillsborough, big stage, you think, surely we won't repeat the mistakes of old, you know, especially after last season.
3 minutes and we were 1-0 down. I mean, David Hurst played amazing, actually.
And it was a ridiculous performance. That first strike, you know, the way he almost cuts through the ball, doesn't he? Like a golf shot where ball pings beyond Spink.
Because it kind of pings and it floats at the same time, and Spink's, I mean, you'd have to kind of levitate to get anywhere near that. It was ridiculous.
I mean, for me, though, there was this... It really caught the eye, and though he could have been a bit tidier with some of his finishing across the game. Carlton Palmer looks every bit a long-term England player, and mark my words, perhaps even an England captain.
Are you sure?
I'm gonna put myself out on a limb there, mark my words, that he will go down as one of the greats.
Maybe Ron should have signed him. I mean, six players made their debuts today. Mm. Three of them scored as we came back fantastically. I mean, Cyril Regis, I was never a big fan of Cyril's just because he played for the Baggies in the Cov.
Well, a free transfer, wasn't he, as well?
Yeah, so his goal got us back in it. And, I mean, a 33-year-old striker, it's not kind of the first thing you have in mind when you're rebuilding a team, but he kind of was at the centre of the revival. And then Dalian Atkinson looks like he could be a bit of a gem.
Yeah, it was a striker's goal, wasn't it? That scrambling around the far post and getting us back level again. Good things to come, I think.
And then Mr. Steve Staunton, ex of Liverpool, on his debut as well.
There's this kid who's never going to amount to nothing. Dwight York, who broke Fed Atkinson down the line.
I've got to admit, I think Ron Atkinson was... he's just kind of giving him a bit of charity because he's a young guy. I think he's going to sell him on.
Yeah, I don't see a future for him.
I mean, Graham Taylor, you know, 17-year-olds from Trinidad and Tobago, is not really the direction we need to be going.
No.
We need to be getting in, like...
We need more Cyril Regis's.
Exactly. When it went 2-2... I was confident Villa were going to snatch it because, I mean, Wednesday brought on Trevor Francis, and that's, I mean, you might as well wave the white flag. How old is he, like 45 or something like that?
He brought himself on. I'm always a bit dubious of managers that bring themselves on. That's not one to really endear you to the rest of the squad, is it?
Well, I mean, I'm surprised Ron Atkinson didn't come on with like 1 minute to go just to soak in the applause.
Cigar in one hand. I've got it, boys.
fuck this Trevor Francis guy. So what do you think? I mean, overall, just to quickly recap, Big Ron basically came out in the press in pre-season when he was Sheffield Wednesday's manager and said, I'm not going anywhere, folks. I mean, obviously, they've been a successful team, especially winning the Rumbelows Cup. And the next day, he signs for Villa.
Yeah, it's...
Good move, Ron.
This is a game with lots of loyalty still in it, so it's a, you know, I'm sure this will be one of the last instances we'll see of a manager just dumping on a club, or a player for that matter. So,
but the good thing is we've got Andy Gray as the assistant manager, who's come back yet again for the third time, and as he said in his interview, he's got claret and blue blood, so he's going to be here for, I think, for decades. I think Doug Ellis will keep Ron around for a long time. I mean, you know, he's not going to sack him just on a whim like he has done to previous managers. So I think he'll keep Ron on for a good few years, and then Andy Gray will take over. I mean, maybe Andy will manage the Villa ladies team as well, because I know he's got a lot of respect for women working in football. So and it's kind of a dual role that he could probably pull off quite comfortably as well. I mean, some managers run an international team at the same time as a club team, so I think Andy can do the ladies team as well. So what did you think? Any quibbles about the Villa team? I mean, what did you think of Paul McGrath? I thought he was a bit shaky in the first half.
Well, there's a reason he's been offloaded from Man United, isn't he? That he's got no knees. And, you know, we have to look to the future, don't we? We have to look perhaps even to the continent. You know, there's rumours that the Big Ron wanted the up-and-coming Nantes defender, Marcel Desailly. You know, but they did say he'd never... Yeah, did you catch those rumours?
Yeah. He's like 23, so I think it's a good time to get him in. I think he said he's never seen such a hard-working player in his life when he went over there to watch him.
That's funny, I heard some scouting reports that he was a bit lazy, or I paraphrase, but something to that effect.
Yeah? Well, I don't know, we'll see. We've got to look to the future. I can't see us challenging for the title next season with McGrath in the team, so I'd probably go for Desailly, because if Ron says he's a hard-working player, then I'd probably ignore the scouts that say he's lazy. So just in a nutshell, we've seen Ron Atkinson's new reign at Villa, first game. What's he going to do at Villa during his time?
An ascendancy. It's, in the words of Doug Ellis, I think he's going to lead us to the Premier League title and beyond. From next season.
Well, I don't know. I think I can see as... I think he's a man. He's a man, as he's shown with Sheffield Wednesday. He's a man who can pull off the one-off game. So I think he's going to win a cup, probably 94. Give him a couple of seasons to get us right. I can't imagine him winning the FA Cup with Villa. So I think a Coca-Cola Cup. But next season, I think we'll be up and at it. We need a few more signings. But I don't know. I don't think he's going to pull that off. I think he's going to get close, but he's going to come up short in the end.
Close but no cigar.
Close but no cigar.
When I go home late at night, this is a song that I really like to sing right now, so I'll play it for you. It's called My Old Man.
About to hold this man off. That's over. Across the keeper, and he scored. That's a very good finish. The angle wasn't great there. Could not have been more precise.
Welcome to the My Old Man Said podcast. I'm David Michael, the editor of myoldmansaid.com. Joining me, we're back again. It's Dan Rogers of the Villa Underground. Welcome back and greetings.
Hello. We are on the cusp of another run. I can feel it. We've got the drive for promotion. We've got the Ashes going on. We've got a royal visit. Tony Jarre, you can sit on his lap if you want to. Isn't that that's the gig, isn't it?
Sitting with Shai.
It's all good. Is that right? And a global smart brain, but we'll come to that.
Do you want to just finish off the show while you're at it? So, was you impressed by our intro there? I thought that the Muller Rice was quite a funny little one.
It's very good.
If we could get Muller Rice as a sponsor, that would be fantastic if anybody's listening for Muller Rice, just for retro purposes. But we do actually have a legitimate sponsor this episode, Futty Accumulators. You probably heard of them if you dwell on Twitter, the number one source for your ACCAs. Is that what you call them?
Ackers.
Ackers. What's your go-to Aston Villa Acker
Samba to score any time with an overhead kick. No.
It's very specific. I didn't know you could get that.
I thought
you normally went for Bjarnason with the scorpion kick. I thought that was your go-to bet.
the Bjarnason scorpion kick. Only on international duty, though. To be honest, I dabble, but, you know, Jedinak hat trick occasionally.
Yeah, well, yeah, that came up trumps. How much did you win on that one?
4 billion Bitcoin.
But do check out Footy Accumulators. The link is in the show notes, and thanks for them for sponsoring. We might be able to pay for that microphone we blew during the international break while we're trying to record.
It's a graveyard of dubious tight Chinese technology now. Thanks, Tony.
Hey, don't blame Tony. I don't think he does microphones. I think just town planning is his gig. Just to quickly on the top of the show to apologise for not getting you an episode during the international break. When I finally managed to track down Mr. Rogers after he was he likes to take a sabbatical. He told me after the international break. International breaks are for sabbaticals, apparently. Thanks for the memo before the international break.
I'm sure I mentioned this during the last international break.
But when we finally got down to do an episode for the end of the international break, technical difficulties reared their head again, and a microphone went AWOL in terms of being able to
perform its primary function, which is record audio.
But so the intro referred to when we were previously 2-0 down against Sheffield Wednesday in the first half. That's way back in 1991. But those are the days where being 2-0 down was a minor flesh wound, and we could come back and still win the game. We didn't do it this time against Sheffield Wednesday this season, but we did manage to beat QPR after being 1-0 down, and that's our first comeback win since, was it Arsenal on the opening day of the season? And when we're 1-0 down, we won 3-1.
August 2013, it's when Tony Moon had us all believing that he was going to be the new insert famous fullback here.
Who's a good left back? Stuart Pearce, that's all I know, left backs. Alan Wright. So we'll discuss that comeback against QPR, which, just quickly, I think it's probably one of the best performances of the season so far. Also touch on the Preston win as well, which equally was a decent performance. All the good stuff seems to be coming away from home. And then we'll also talk about that Wednesday failure and the what ended up to be a bit of a huff and puff struggle against Sunderland, but a valuable 3 points nonetheless.
Negatron alert! John Terry on some lounger in Dubai until further notice! Won't be seen in a Villa kit again until championship trophy presentation!
Right, let's go into the 3 points. Dr. Tony's back in town after quite a long absence, actually. I think, when did he... Last time, I think, was he at the opening game? And that's about it.
Yeah, it's been a while, hasn't it? But he managed to fly in for the glorious Sunderland victory. And how convenient that Prince William was in town.
Yeah, he just came for the selfie, didn't he? Let's be honest.
No, hang on a minute. There was a very, very important presentation to the squad, and our key intellectual ambassadors, Gabby Ogbonlahor and Jack Grealish, were present to be presented with the Recon Group Global Smart Brain presentation. Any thoughts, gentlemen, on the global strategy?
I was hoping that if you attended that, and we're referring to when Dr. Tony arrived, he issued on Twitter a few pictures of him giving the players a talk at Bodymore Heath. And one of the pictures, if you look closely, there's basically all the players are sitting there looking at the whiteboard projector, PowerPoint presentation, whatever it is. And if you zoom in on it, you see that it's like a PowerPoint presentation picture of, there's the global smart brain in the middle of something called the global smart brain, pointing to, like, is it town development? And he's just thinking, what's Grealish, Gabby and co going to get from this? I mean, I was hoping that anybody who attended that presentation on the global smart brain would get a free global smart brain to use and improve their life and potential ability as well. I mean, that would maybe turn Gabby into a £20 million striker if he had a global smart brain. Prince William was in town to... I don't know what he was doing there.
You don't know? He was endorsing the Birmingham Coach Corps Apprentices Scheme.
Ah, that's what it was.
And going to Jaguar Land Rover to look at all their shiny cars and the original whistle factory.
I was just about to say, don't forget the whistle. Was it Acme? Didn't they do the cartoons?
It's even better than that. It's Acme. No, they didn't pull out Roadrunner and co. But they did get... It is worth 30 seconds of your
time. I've seen the video. When they blow the whistles.
About a foot away from both of their faces, yeah. A very excitable whistle producer. He's clearly been speaking very keenly about his whistles, blasts the shrill whistle at the heavily pregnant.
I might, I've got a louder one,
he goes. my waters! I don't know why she was Bavarian. Ah, my waters! Something in the lineage, I'm sure.
No, but first of all, I saw a picture of them putting their fingers in their ears. Yes. And then I found that video, and in the video, at no point do they put their fingers in their ears. No point does the guy warn them that he's about to blow their eardrums.
This is your moment. Quick, get the whistle from the Titanic.
Brace yourself, please.
That's
what it's like now.
And I think William should have decked him, to be honest.
He does style it out quite well whilst there's blood running out of his ears.
I mean, just from the clips of them waltzing around Birmingham, one thing is they know how to do the smile and keep everything on a jolly keel very well. Just before we move on, what's Dr. Tony talking about the Villa haters in his tweet?
I'm not sure what that means.
Do we know?
The Villa haters. Is this a made-up thing?
First of all, he's saying that obviously to win, get people on his side. But, I mean, this is referring to a tweet where he's implying that certain people have been shit-talking him, is that the term? And dropping his share price on some of his companies.
Yeah, I don't know what that... I've not seen anything. There were some bits and pieces when they're from one journalist questioning him.
But that was a long time ago.
Yeah, that was months ago, wasn't it? So I don't know what... This is something back home, because it's not easy, not necessarily easy to get all of the Chinese press this side, and vice versa.
Wasn't somebody implying that he'd come to England to escape something, like escape jail or something? is that a Birmingham City trick?
Carson Young.
Yeah, that's the one.
He was jailed in Hong Kong. I think he's just been released, hasn't he, recently?
Yeah, but he had to go back, didn't he? They were after chasing him.
Yeah. He was done for fraud, wasn't it, basically?
Yeah. Well, enjoy your last few days of freedom, Dr. Tony.
Maybe that's why he's back here. It's asylum. He'll be holed up in the Ecuadorian embassy before.
He'll have a picture of Prince William, his selfie of Prince William in his cell to get him through the night.
And he'll be cuddling his global smart brain.
Anyway, enough of smart brains. Let's get on to... I don't know if you saw The Sun... ran an article regarding there's a bit of a worry going on that forensic tests have been compromised. Mm-hmm. And we're talking about thousands of forensic tests. Mm-hmm. And one of the examples of the cases that it throws up is the death of Dalian Atkinson, obviously in the incident with the police tasering him. Mm. Nothing wrong with the article, all fair enough. And, you know, Dalian Atkinson's case is now, it's gone past its first year anniversary. So, the family still hasn't had justice or any real answers there. But The Sun, for a picture of Dalian Atkinson, for some reason, there was a picture of Leandro Bacuna there.
Hmm.
There's, what's the term, casual racism? So far this season, there's been a lot of like Adoma mix-ups. I mean, Opta fucked it up one week, and Opta feed like the BBC, Sky, also Aston Villa's, that text minute-by-minute coverage, online coverage. So all of these, suddenly, I can't remember who scored, I think it was a Domar or a Nomar scored, and everybody had said it was a Domar on all these various media outlets. And, you know, people are saying there, but you can understand, you know, a Nomar, a Domar, somebody can get that mixed up. But The Sun, I mean, The Sun have I remember doing a Media Muppet article about them. It was a classic. I think it was pre-season, a couple of seasons ago, when Paul Lambert was in charge and we played Parma at Villa Park, where we when we used to do like the kind of the one big European game at Villa Park a week before the season kicks off. And the Sun had a little, like a 100-word blurb on this game. And it was, headline was, Aston Villa nil, Roma nil. And then in those, that small little brief write-up, it mentions like the Roma goalkeeper, you know, making a save here, Roma forward missing a chance. And then there's a picture of the Villa female mascot hugging Roy Keane. And the caption says, Villa mascot Hercules hugs Paul Lambert. So they not only got the name of the team wrong repeatedly, but also got the name of the Villa manager wrong. But so in this case, it's why, how do you end up with Bakuna when you're looking for a picture of Dalian Atkinson?
They've got a lot of previous on this, the Sun, haven't they? And I imagine it's not just confined to us, yeah.
I read a Media Muppets article about it and I said, surely it's not the conversation where you go, oh yeah, here's the article. Oh yeah, can you put a picture of Dalian Atkinson in there? We don't have a picture. I'd just use any black player in a Villa shirt. Yeah,
just fine. Quick, get on Getty Images. Quick, just he'll do. And against the backdrop of two things, that what's been reported as the largest forensic scandal this country will have ever known, and an unsolved potential. Be careful with my terminology, but an unsolved, unanswered death of a potentially innocent person, and yet it's just a classic scabby, low rent article, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean the article's fair enough, but I mean, if you can't get a picture,
low effort,
no effort whatsoever. I mean, who's running the picture desk? It's a joke. I mean, the Paddy Power listing Hugo Ekiog as after he'd passed away as issuing odds on him to be the next Blues manager. I mean, that's nefarious and nasty. The Sun thing isn't as bad as that, but it's just, you know, how do you go from Dalian Atkinson to Leandro Bakuna? It's completely bizarre. Anyway, number three, also in the media, our favourite CEO, Tom Fox, or former CEO. What the Fox is Happening? That was one of my favourite banners of that season, the relegation season.
Well, he's saying that he had a lovely time at Villa Park and he'd come back in a heartbeat.
Yeah, he said he loved it, getting Villa relegated and everything.
I love the Maroons.
The one word that is used to describe Tom Fox, and I think, was it Pete Collier? Is he the ex-Sky sportsman? He called him it on his Twitter, you know, linking this retweeting this article, this interview with The Independent, Tom Fox's Independent interview, and called him a charlatan, amongst other things. And charlatan is a word that a few people have labelled him as. And, I mean, from my personal experiences, I mean, as well as charlatan, I'd throw liar in there as well.
Sit on the fence, Dave.
Yeah, but also in that interview, Tom Fox talks about how that Fabian Delph was, that whole thing was basically a financial arrangement, as I said at the fucking time. Look, just commit to us. It'll be good PR for the rest of the season. And, you know, you give us the money and it'll be a low buyout clause so you can, you know, happily go on your way in the summer. And just to take the fans for a ride like that is just an insult. And that was the thing that always, that was the kind of elephant in the room for me in terms of Fox, was they did that just to get a nice, you know, 8 million quid. It was like a deal. I mean, they just played the system.
Yeah, he played the system, and you know, there's lots of bad systems at play.
But don't take the fucking fans for a ride.
It's like a lot of his decisions, though. In the same article, it doesn't go nearly deep enough because it mentions the flops in terms of Almstadt and O'Reilly and people like that. But it doesn't. Yeah. You know, he appointed them, but there's no scrutiny of how bad those, you know, not just those individuals, but the players that they brought in on a, you know, the Moneyball system, which. It's flawed, and we're the best example of that. If you wanted one, there, we're the case study of how not to stabilise a football club.
Let's carry on to brighter pastures now. We are now fourth in the league. Before we go into, well, maybe we'll talk about the games as we go along, but before we get into them per se, the big word at the moment is injury, and all these injuries that have been mounting up. First one, of the obvious one, is Codger.
Bad one.
Goes off against the Blues injured, doesn't play again, not fit enough for Villa, still manages to be flown out. And the Ivory Coast basically telling us at every juncture that, oh, yeah, no, he's fit, he's all good. And then the first training session, he's out, and he's out for a long, long time. Now, I mean, I wrote an article basically saying if this was Sir Alex Ferguson or any, like, you know, hardball manager, if a player isn't fit for your club, surely that gives you grounds to tell a football association to go fuck themselves.
I thought so. I mean, what, this is... Codger wasn't...
I mean, even if you've got to play a little few dark arts...
Well, we didn't need to either. That's the point, isn't it? That the guy was clearly not in any shape to be going away on international duty and is broken down badly, it looks like, doesn't it? I mean, all I can assume is that we haven't had confirmation, have we, yet, but it looks like the same bone's gone. So it clearly wasn't healed properly. I mean, the long and short of it is we're going to be missing him for a while, and irrelevant of the form he was in, it's going to bite at some point.
Jedinak, I mean, I was even dubious about sending him off to Australia, but at least he'd played a couple of substitute appearances for Villa before he went out. So at least he was match fit for Villa, and Codger hadn't even, you know, played a minute.
No, it was...
So, I mean, yes, they will probably get some insurance FIFA compensation, but, you know, it means bugger all in the context of this. So in terms of Codger, Bruce has admitted that he's going to buy somebody in the January window. I think it's a necessity, really. Quite funny, I read the Birmingham Mail thing. Ah, good news on the striker front. Hepburn Murphy is back. It's like...
Has he ever been here? Seems like he's been here. He's back.
Ooh. Guess a lot of articles written about him for... like, at the moment, you'd have to consider him a non-entity, really.
Superseded by Davis.
Yeah, no, completely.
And he's Hogan's a dead stick as well at the moment, isn't he, after having some nasty surgery?
It's getting to the stage where are we wasting our breath talking about Scott Hogan on this podcast?
Maybe. I think some people have already written him off, definitely. I think if the manager's talking about buying, that's only more competition in it, isn't it?
Yeah, because normally in that situation you would say, well, there's a chance for Scott Hogan to stand up and be counted. I mean, I don't know the ins and outs of his injury beyond his stomach, but I'm imagining it will be a couple of weeks. I would expect to see him in December, but I mean, when he's played, he's been like a ghost almost, with the lowest amount of touches of any player every time. And Villa don't really play to his strengths. I mean, we've had this discussion many times.
Yeah, I think that's the mantra that we've tried to, and we still try to have a balanced view on him. I think that we've seen some of the good bits of his game. I think we have a meeting of the minds that I don't think we necessarily play to his strengths, but he's increasingly not helped himself. He's come on, he's had 20 minutes here, 20 minutes there. And like I think you said, we were talking about some of the more recent games, you wouldn't have known he was on the pitch sometimes.
Yeah.
And that's alarming when you've got no impact off the bench, and that I would have thought would be alarm bells for Bruce, who's thinking probably for this sort of scenario, and actually maybe when you want 10 or 15 minutes to give a defence a run around, you need someone coming off the bench. And the other thing for Hogan is that if Hepburn Murphy is fit and alongside him, they're starting to get ahead of him in the pecking order, like Davies says, and that's writing's on the wall when you're supposed to be the Billy big-time striker.
The other big injury, which we haven't actually spoken about on this show, is Mr. Terence, John Terry.
That's a shame.
Don't know why I called him Terence there. But for me, out of the two injuries, that's the bigger injury, because he was looking like the man. I mean, I was completely won around. I thought all that yoga he's been doing has obviously been doing the trick. And he was like a proper defender, and he sorted out that defence. I mean, the clean sheets spoke for themselves. Yep. And it was kind of he didn't actually collide with anybody, did he, when he got injured? It wasn't an obvious injury, put it that way.
Yeah, yeah. It was that one of those weird sort of contacts and where the foot bent or he caught it under his... Yeah, it's a weird metatarsal injury, isn't it? A real shame for Terry, because like you say, I think people across football really quite dubious of a drop down and a move to Villa. But I think game by game, he was really looking good and really looking like a captain as well.
Yeah, I mean, there was a lot of cynicism. I mean, there was two types of cynicism. One was like our kind of cynicism, where we were saying, it's a bit of a gamble, but the name at the end of the day will sell your shirts.
Yeah.
Well, it'll sell your shirts if you have the foresight to get enough letters in to spell his name, so you can sell those shirts. But that's another story.
Call that one classic Villa,
bad marketing planning. And
we've got loads of Bakunas.
Or is it Atkinson? Ooh, who knows? But he'll be a good influence on, you know, on the squad because, hey, we've got a top name here and, and that can only have a good knock-on effect. And, you know, if you get 20-odd games out of him, then pretty good. And if you get promoted, it's all happy days. And then, the other, let's say, educated cynicism was, well, you might break down with injury as well.
Yep.
But at the same time, if he comes good, it's a great season. It's a good, it's a good buy. It's a good gamble. And then the other cynicism was like 442 magazine saying worst signing of the window. It's like, this is just for the fucking headline, isn't it? Because he's not the worst signing of the window. These Manchester Uniteds and Manchester Cities who have spent like 50 million on a player could potentially have the worst signing because that's a lot of money to bomb out on somebody who doesn't work when Terry's transfer fee. Proven. And it's just the question of age. But he's I don't think he'd be up for it and playing in the Championship if he wasn't fit enough.
And he had proven that. I think he was in fantastic shape and it wasn't because of lack of fitness that he broke down. It was just a freak injury, I think, that could have happened to any player. You know, we'll get to the games in a minute, really. I think that it's funny that he's dropped out, that since he's dropped out, that we've definitely lost that experience, haven't we, that experienced guile.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weight loss. That's PlushCare.com/weight loss. PlushCare.com/weight loss.
Picture the scene. All of your mates around, you've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Partner this with your team playing champagne football. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. There's nothing quite like a McDelivery. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Well, no, more like we're not as organised. I mean, look at the two goals we've conceded against QPR and...
Sunderland.
Sunderland, the last two games. I mean, these are goals that were put away within the six-yard box. And, I mean, the second one was... I mean, Johnson should have, against Sunderland, Johnson should have probably strong-armed that a bit more rather than parrying it to the guy on the wing to put it straight back in, then he was out of position. But the other one, he was kind of flapping around from a corner and the organisation was probably a bit lacking, which brings me to the point, so far, Samba's been the man to replace him. Now, we thought, when we were trying to record this podcast before until the mic exploded, we are actually sitting here still with ashen faces, with our hair spiked up like a cartoon explosion. But before we discussed this, and I think you actually said Samba will probably get a couple of games to, you know, show us what you got, and then Jedinak would potentially come in, and that would obviously give him time to get over from his recent international air miles jaunt.
And that seems to be the strategy, doesn't it? I think that from Bruce's point of view, Samba is the experienced, proven to a different degree to Terry centre half, and I think what we've seen is they've got different strengths, so you're not going to get like for like. And we saw against Sunderland, and we'll get into that in a minute, I'm sure.
Well, Samba's like, I think the term is a unit, isn't he? He's massive. He's
physically massive.
And against QPR, I thought he was fine, I thought.
Yeah. I mean, he was fine against QPR. I thought, that, again, all the things that actually we know about Samba. And what we started to see as well when people get games, and I know it's only the second one, but, you know, he's been on a long period of a fitness run with the club. He's been training for a long time behind closed doors. He made a tackle against Sunderland that earlier in the season, I think he conceded a penalty. He made a fantastic tackle against Sunderland in the first half in the penalty area where you thought, you know, that's what you buy in there, really. You're buying that bit of experience and that actually having the confidence to make that sort of challenge at this level as well.
Well, he was just trying to compete with Hutton for the Hollywood tackles.
Yes, whilst Glenn Whelan was kind of like the battering ram, if you like, whereas Samba and Hutton were the Hollywood tackles.
The full-on sliding tackle. Hutton got a couple of good ones in. The kind of tackle that suddenly there's a massive applause around. It wasn't actually that much atmosphere in the Sunderland game.
It was very subdued. A bit
almost spooky at times, but certainly one of the only things warming the crowd up were Hutton's tackles.
Megatron alert! Yedinak has scored a hat-trick on international duty! Noel Davis's new contract!
Let's look at the QPR game. We'll put it in context. It was after the international break.
Yes, after having, you know, we'd lost to Sheffield Wednesday, and this was the game where we needed to pick ourselves back up, really, and get back on a winning run.
Before the international break, away from home, we'd put in a pretty decent performance, you know, almost impressive. It could have been more against Preston.
Dominant, yeah.
I mean, okay, granted, they were missing a large part of their back line or their first team back line, but even some Preston fans said that was kind of immaterial because Villa kind of bossed it and, you know, looked completely different to the last time we played, yeah?
Absolutely.
And it was, you know, we were just looking for that. We're playing Sheffield Wednesday at home. Sheffield Wednesday, 3 losses away from home on the trot in their previous away trips. And that's when you start to think with Villa, this is a bit of a banana skin because Sheffield Wednesday are a team, as we speak, are still capable of, I think, playoffs no problem. I mean, they've been up there in the last season or two and they're still a threat as far as I'm concerned. So, you know, dodgy patch of form means nothing.
And the Wednesday game was a bit of a freak game for a number of reasons. There were some strange decisions on Bruce's part, you know, inexplicably picking Snodgrass when he'd had to have an injection for broken ribs. It was a bizarre one.
That one rattled me actually.
Silly, you know, and Bruce having to sub in before half time and the reaction, because it was actually a really dumb tactical decision. You know, going behind to after just, you know, less than a minute to, you know, a ridiculous strike.
Just stop there 1 second. That's what I was thinking about that, relating it to Codger, thinking, Snodgrass can play. He's got 2 fractured, broken ribs. Mm. He's good enough to play. Oh, Codger, we'll send him off on international duty. He'll be all right next week. I don't know. That's when I thought, if it was just Codger in isolation, then I thought, okay, well, maybe they thought he was all right. But still, I think you have to play for your club in the previous game before you can actually, you know, viably go on international duty. But the fact that he'd let Snodgrass play, who broke down as soon as he chested the ball.
Yeah, he couldn't do it, could he?
And, I mean, I thought it was confusing at the start when you're watching the game and Snodgrass was throwing his shin pads around and, you know, looking really angry. So you're also thinking, well, do you have that reaction if you're injured? And then you think, well, it's 40 minutes. What a stupid time to make a substitution, because surely you wait for half time and then, you know, then you give a chance to restructure it in the dressing room if you're going to bring somebody else on.
But it's a little bit odd.
But that was, we just imploded. Terry going off after 20 minutes, going down 1-0, and then almost straight after Terry going off, going down 2-0. And you just thought, we're not winning this, no way. There's no way back for this one. But that's when you start to have that doubt where you felt guilty for believing that we're going to be in the playoffs at least this season. And then you thought, well, the way we chased that game, we were inept most of the time as well.
I think when he gets it wrong, he gets it glaringly wrong, and it's kind of, we spoke in brief before in previous podcasts around that this is definitely the level that I think Bruce understands, because, you know, we can go on and we can talk about the Preston game. You know, Bruce knew exactly how to win that game of football and did it efficiently and impressively, you know, and you carry that forward into the, you know, the QPR result. That it's no surprise to me that Bruce worked out how to get us back into that game and win it. It wasn't always pretty at times, but we were composed and
I thought we were pretty cool against QPR. I mean, we had 26 shots.
We were really composed and determined, I think would be the word I'd use for that game.
Yeah. I mean, 20 of those from open play. I mean, we were having a go. I think when we were 1-0 down, there was people, on social media and obviously in the away end that were just like, fucking hell, Bruce. And then, suddenly turning on Bruce again, obviously, because they'd lost the previous game. But the way we were playing against Sheffield Wednesday, we went 1-0 down and then Terry went off and then 2-0 down and then the Snodgrass incident, you just thought this is just a shambolic day at the office. And I think hopefully it's a one-off, but there's no way back in this. But against QPR, you felt, I don't think we'll lose this.
No, exactly. We had a feeling, didn't you? And it had been a long time, and it was something I wrote about on the site, that I think we've become so accustomed to going game to game, and we've spoken about this binary way of thinking, that actually... We're a much different unit now than we were even perhaps 6 months ago. You know, our heads didn't drop, and I think we both mentioned separately as well that we had stamina over 90 minutes. There was no way QPR were going to win that game. There was absolutely no way that, and I think if anything, you look at the 26 shots, and it's something that's carried through for a number of games. We need to be more ruthless in front of goal, because it undersells the threat that we carry sometimes. You know, that's not to say there aren't insipid games like the Sunderland one, but that's where your Bruce's, I think, come into it. That it's, I don't prescribe to much of his throwaway statements about the Championship, but there are samey groups of fixtures where you have to approach them in a certain way.
Yeah, that's what I thought was different. I mean, the team, or let's give him the benefit of the doubt here. He was a lot more aggressive this time, because you looked at the QPR game and you thought, well, here's a team that God knows what they're doing away from home, but at home they're the fourth best in the league. Yeah, their record, they've seen off Sheffield United and Wolves in the same week, and they've only lost once. So you kind of thought, well, Bruce's mindset here is going to be, well, we'll take a draw here. And then when we went 1-0 down, you're thinking, well, he's definitely going to take a draw here. But that wasn't how it was playing out. We were going for it, and that goal, just the one we conceded, was just like, well, it's just a minor obstacle. We're gonna win this game.
The really pleasing thing is, I think that we've got a couple of players now, I think, can sniff a victory. And Adoma's
name
in there.
Them. Name and shame. I'm going to name and shame.
I'm going to mention Adoma, because I think he's, everyone can recognise what a rich and fantastic.
Right, how much money has he got?
He can have as much money as he wants if he carries on playing as he is, to be honest. He's that cool customer. He put away the penalty. And the reason I mentioned the players that have got a bit of a taste coming, I think, for getting at teams, is that Hourihane and Snodgrass's first instinct is to get forward and move the ball forward. And
I think
the second goal,
for
the second, for that released ball for the second goal that Adoma runs onto. And I mentioned in my review of the game, really, that live it looked like a straightforward goal, but it's a fantastic move from the centre of the pitch through to the final third, and Adoma just unleashes that strike across the goalkeeper. Fantastic goal, and it's a fantastic goal to win that game by, and it summed it up for me that the Villa of old would have conceded that first goal, even having been on top, and you could have said, forget it, you might as well have packed your bags and gone in the car and gone home.
I mean, I did have one criticism of Adoma, was, I think we've said it before, but this wasn't the same reason, was his kind of contribution from that side as a winger in terms of a provider. I think the last time we spoke, he'd scored all his goals, but he hadn't actually made one assist this season, where you compare it to last season, where he was like the top assist man in double figures. But some of his crossing was a bit weak. It wasn't beating the first man. It was a bit kind of half-hearted, not really targeting anybody. He just put it in there half-heartedly.
I'd say that's a criticism that stems back to last season. Yeah.
That's just something I noticed. But, I mean, you can't knock his timing of his runs and his kind of instincts for,
his instinct is
sniffing,
like,
out the goals.
That's the point, isn't it? That they want to. He's in that group of players now that their instinct isn't to go sideways or backwards. And people have got their favourite players who they can remember for doing that over the last 5 or 6 years.
Yeah.
It's refreshing. It doesn't always work. And I think that those same players can be hampered when Bruce says, do you know what, we're going to shut up shop here or play a certain way. Hourihane particularly, I think, suffers for that.
He has got a routine now, hasn't
yes,
he, Bruce?
It's not discreet.
On comes Jedinek.
It's not discreet, is it? And, by the way, Al Mohammadi, you're playing up front for the next 10 minutes. It reminded me, do you remember we used to have Ricardo Skimeka up front for a few weeks when we had this? Where's Elmo? Yeah, about that right back role I wanted you to do. No, centre forward today. That is very Bruce, if you were to say which managers come up with that idea.
I tweeted at the time, I said, send Samba up front.
It's, you know, it's one of them, isn't it? It is one of them.
One thing I like about Snodgrass, I don't think his final products, though, like where you'd see the highlights reels of when you'd watch the highlights and, you know, him scoring for Leeds or Norwich or whatever, he'd be scoring, pinging in free kicks and all long distance efforts. His final product isn't there yet, but he gets about, he's hustling and bustling. I mean, he provided the two assists for the QPR game.
Can I be controversial on Snodgrass?
Yeah, go for it.
Because I think he's a good player and I think he improves us, but you can see why he's never gone on to be a top midfielder, I think, in the Premier League, because he's got the attributes, like you say, don't you think, that he's known for those dead balls and for being able to spot a pass, and he's got this thing where he cuts in onto his left foot because he plays on the wrong side to the foot, to his natural foot, but he does try the same things. And it was interesting, particularly against Sunderland, that what people's opinion of him was, whereas I thought he had a good game. You know, it wasn't a perfect game, it was a good game. And some people really, I don't think, take to the amount of stuff that might not come off. But he's one of those players where he plays on the percentages, perhaps. You know what I mean? That he's...
Yeah. I know, because, I mean, I think his effort gives us a bit more solidity in midfield.
I agree.
And, I mean, I think that's what Bruce thought when he was thinking about finally managing to shoehorn the 4-4-2 in, was he would give us a bit of meat and gravy in the midfield from the, you know, from coming in from the wing. So it's not like you're playing like with two wide men who don't really get stuck in into the midfield in terms of defending. But he gives you that big time. And Hourihan is somebody who, again, I don't think he's playing as forward as we would like ideally, but he's doing a lot of box to box, and he's always seen back tackling on the edge of his own 18-yard box.
Yeah, he worked very hard against Sunderland, and I thought he had one of his best games against QPR. He's a player I like, and he's another one I think because he struggled to adapt and struggled to the system that Bruce had him in at times, was becoming singled out for being a bit of a, you know, why is he not showing the kind of form that brought him here from Barnsley?
Yeah.
I think he's technically very, very good, and I hope he develops into something that we can really see blossom for Villa, and that we can hold on to, because I do think he's got the potential to be a great midfielder for us.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to put the cart before the horse, but if we got promoted, he's one of the players that hopefully would step up and he would feel like a Villa player, because I mean, just look at the team that started against, well, the last two games. Johnson potentially not here if we get promoted. Hutton, last year of his contract, would we have him in the Premier League as a right back? Who knows? Samba, no, probably not good enough for the Premier League anymore. Snodgrass alone, probably go back. Well, he will go back. Anomar will go back. Whelan, it's going to be a bit old for that league. Terry, although he didn't start the last two games, he would have been a starter. So we would only have less than half the team in the Premier League. So who's going to actually be a starter in the Premier League after rebuilding? I mean, maybe Chester, and then Hourihan, and, you know, Davis might not even get a start. Well, be the number one starter. So there's not that many players who we currently have that can be a Villa player that we've loved from our promotion campaign, and we hold close. And Hourihan's probably got the best shot at that.
He's one of the players you think has got that gear above that's not yet tapped, and that room for a bit more development. And like you say, to really become a great Villa player, I think he's got that potential.
He's got to build some confidence and mental toughness to believe in himself as well. Because, you know, we've seen some of the stuff he did for Barnsley, and I think he's got the ability, but he's got to be shown to be doing it time and time again, and think of himself a little bit, you know, cut above the rest of them.
And we do have challenges. I mean, trying to cover, I suppose, the Sunderland game in brief and tie it into that a little bit. So you look at players like Anomar, who are technically excellent, and you think, wow, that, you know, how do we're lucky to have him. How do we develop and build a team that could stand to lose a player like that, you know, like at the end of the season, or, you know, and what's the realistic prospect of us, you know, getting a player like that on a permanent deal, or do you know what, do you just look at the next player like Anoma coming through wherever and try and, do you see what I mean? It's challenging, because I think if we go up this season, then you'd have to say that someone like him would have been quite central to our success.
Yeah, I mean, I think with him, there's a chance of getting him. I don't think he's going to be cheap, obviously.
Do you not think, though, if we got promoted and Anoma, because, you know, you look across the team and he would be in his position a standout player. You get promoted, and I don't think he's in the bracket, unfortunately. And this is sad for English football, I guess, is that he's not going to be bursting into the the Spurs team, I don't think, with their ambitions. But do your middling Premier League team start to take a view on players like that? You know, and that would be my worry.
Yeah, but I'm thinking it's either Spurs or Villa, as far as I'm concerned. If he's played a season with us and we're in the Premier League, In the Premier League, you've got like the top six, let's say 6 to 8, and then the rest of them are all the same.
Bit of a churn, yeah, I suppose so.
And that's where the Villa's tradition, the name, the size of the stadium suddenly gives you an advantage over, you know. So, Neymar, do you want to play for Villa or West Brom or Watford or Burnley? Well, I've just spent a season with Villa and their stadium's twice as big. I think I'll stay there. Thank you very much. So I don't see not much competition from other teams in keeping an Omar. The only thing is what Spurs' plans are.
Mm-hmm.
But we're jumping the gun here because there's a long way to go.
A long way to go.
Even though we are in our highest position we've been since we dropped to this sorry league. I just want to go back to that microphone that blew up. This show's costing us money, folks. Please do support us by being a patron. I just want to give a shout out to Dean Gregory for joining us, a My Old Man Said patron in the past month. Daniel Gooding, Ian Edwards for upping up his pledge to be able to listen to advanced sneaks of the podcast, which over the last few weeks has come in handy because at least you've actually got a podcast when we've haven't for whatever reason managed to get the main one out. So patrons would have already heard our little intro that we did. I gave them the raw uncut edition with us laughing a lot while we recorded it. It's a bit more somber now. Also, shout out to Tony Keane for joining as well, and Fitzgerald Parchment. That's a
great name.
Fantastic name, actually. And also Jeremy Rogers and Josh Reed as well. Thank you very much. In this world where... Oh, did I tell you, Dan, that I got banned from Facebook for 3 days?
Oh, they do respond to me clicking that button. I knew they did. Finally, 5 years of reporting you.
For posting a video of a German goalkeeper miss-kicking the ball, which went viral everywhere. I think BT Sport, they put a kind of a video, and it was like, it was on Sky, you know, Sky Germany or whatever. Yahoo put it out there, they shared it, and you're just thinking, well...
You were the fool guy.
It's like 4 seconds of footage, and you're banning me for copyrights or whatever reason. And it's shonky quality. It's like somebody's recorded it, you know, off their TV or whatever. And, you know, no answer to your appeals. But then, I mean, forget about that. I mean, that's whatever. That's just them being dicks. But the thing about Facebook, what they're doing now, I mean, I used to get most of my traffic from Facebook in terms of the website. But what they do is they're trying to get you to pay to promote your posts. And the amount of people reading the posts is probably the same as when I had like 3,000, 4,000 followers on Facebook. Now it's about 27,000. And what they do is filter them. So if you want them to go out further to more of your readers, you have to pay for it. And this is how they're kind of controlling the game. So you don't get the same amount of people, even though you've got more followers like from like 3 years ago. And this is how the internet's changing. It's, you know, it's getting nastier and more controlled, because in the, you know, the end game is obviously, even with service providers, they want to like start to slow down bandwidths to certain websites, unless you're, you know, paying or you're actually owned by the company who you know, provides the broadband or whatever, the service providers. It's all a bit nefarious the way it's going. That's why there's all these campaigns for net neutrality.
It's all a bit dubious because you think about who, everyone knows the impact upon things like elections and things, but the control of information irrelevant. It doesn't just apply to this, I suppose, but it does always interest me, and it's one of the reasons I don't do Facebook. It's, you know, there are other organisations that are as dubious, really. You know, I'm sure Twitter's another one where there's a question mark around them. What's the word? Taking positions on people's political statements, where previously it's been a pretty much free for all, really.
Yeah,
Facebook's very interesting for me because your example is very interesting. That what's the point in having followers if you have to then almost subcontract to be able to send them information? Because Facebook, ultimately, for all their bleating, from what I can see, don't really care what that information is, so long as you pay them to deliver it. You know, Russia, you know, it's the old American, the Russian American, the Russian influence on the American election thing, isn't it? That it wasn't just one or two orchestrated, but and it wasn't all about bots, it was organised information.
Yeah, and they were quite happily spreading that. I mean, yeah. That's the, and on the other hand, you've got the companies that have worked out how you get the clicks for advertising via the system that's set up. For example, as News Now, the aggregate that when you write a post, if you're subscribed to it, and my site is, and your site is, and you know the Birmingham Mail is, and the newspapers are, it's a news aggregate, so a Villa fan can just look at it and get all the headlines. Now, there's some websites that are set up, and they're part of a network, and they do this for every team. They'll just write any old stories, put a sexy headline on, and it's normally like Villa fans say sack Bruce now, and you just go, this, that's the big headline, people click on it, and then what it is just a shitty article by some no-name.
You've already read and you're already aware of often.
And it's just a load of compilation of people's tweets. Villa fans took to Twitter.
Outraged at Villa strikers' injuries.
So they know that it's all about the headline. And, you know, from my experience, if you write, you know, like a real serious piece and the headline fits it, it's just a matter-of-fact headline, you get hardly any readers. To some piece of transfer rumour that you put a, you know, alternative for Codger, and then bang, you get thousands reading it.
Thousands and thousands. Yeah.
But you don't want to play that game. But half of me thinks, well, I don't, you know, it's so low rent that, you know, I've got one life. I ever want to do something I'm proud of, and that's good. But the problem is, it's not a business model. It's not a way of doing it. So that's why, you know, we have to do something like patrons and Patreon, which if we get more patrons, it's a game changer. We can start to do things for supporters and actually create a show. For example, this podcast takes on a whole new dimension, as does the website. But when you're in a situation where you have to do things for, like, you know, for advertising or whatever, and to be honest, advertising is almost a waste of time. So go to myomensaid.com and click on the Patreon, and please do, you know, whatever, even if it's just a dollar, or you can pay in pounds if you go to the bottom of the My Old Man Said website. It all helps, and there's more benefits as we speak. I am working on a couple of interesting things for the new year, hopefully. I mean, these are all extras. You should just be supporting us. Also, one thing that does keep us going is your tweets and your emails and suggestions. You know, if we get a little comments, you'll be amazed. It does mean a lot, and it does kind of give you a glimmer of hope that you're not wasting your time. Can't believe we went through a podcast without mentioning Bjarnason. Oh, we did might mention him at the start. Ipswich, do we need to talk about Ipswich?
Nah.
That's the problem with the championship, with all these bloody midweek games.
It throws it all out of whack, doesn't it?
It just, straight away, it's out of date in terms of that. And it'd be nice to just put a podcast out on, like, Tuesday and have a few days for people to listen to it before the weekend fixture comes. By the time this comes out, the Ipswich game, some people will have listened to it after the Ipswich game. Right. So, anything to add?
I think that covers all topics.
No more international breaks, so no more sabbaticals for you until March.
Oh, fantastic. I can't wait. There's lots to do between now and then. Listen, I don't want to keep you from the Ashes. I know how much you enjoy cricket.
Okay, well, until England win the Ashes, it's goodbye from me and it's goodbye from him.
Goodbye.
My old man said...
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximize your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.